You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm Dave Ramil, a credentialed reporter, the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get $10 off your next order. On Sunday afternoon, the Miami Heat were up 3-0 over the Milwaukee Bucks, looking to break out the brooms and advance to the Eastern Conference Finals for the first time since 2014. And then midway through the second quarter, Giannis Antetokounmpo twisted his ankle, went to the locker room, and did not return for the game. His status for Game 5, unfortunately, still up in the air. And it looked like Miami was going to have a good chance of being able to end Antetokounmpo's season a little bit earlier than expected. But Chris Middleton had other plans, scoring 36 points and helping to keep the series alive. It was an ugly game for the Miami Heat, honestly. It was not the kind of game that you'd expect for them, considering how well they've played for the first three games of the series. I'll get into the good, the bad, the ugly, recap a little bit of the game, and of course answer your questions moving forward as to what the Heat did wrong, what they could have done a little differently, because it was a very atypical game for the Heat. Part of the problem was they built a double-digit lead early, and it looked like they were going to be able to pretty much cruise for the rest of the Game 5. It did not quite work out that way, and then Antetokounmpo had a magnificent effort through the first few minutes of the game. He actually looked like he was going to be the most aggressive that he's been all series long. This was after spraining his ankle in Game 3 and looking like he might be doubtful for Game 4. Prior to the game, they were talking about whether or not he was going to be available. He looked smooth. He looked like he was healthy. And in fact, he did wind up going out and playing very well. Again, he looked aggressive, but Miami was able to counter that. They were able to build that lead. Then Antetokounmpo kind of kept him back into the game. And then, of course, he went down with the ankle injury, and something just seemed to go wrong for both teams, or differently anyway. From Miami's side, they just seemed to kind of lose energy. It just seemed like they had no momentum from that point forward, both on offense and defense. And I think a lot of that had to do with Miami keying so much of their defense on Antetokounmpo and building the wall and then having other players step up and rise to the challenge. Well, they did, Middleton in particular, but they got some key performances from other players. Brooke Lopez, even Dante DiVincenzo came off the bench to knock in some big shots here and there. So they got the supreme effort from the rotational players that they had not got in the first three games of the series. And Miami's offense just looked very, very lackluster, very different than the kind of, again, scoring punch that we've seen from them during the first three games, where they've moved the ball well, where they've shot the ball well from the perimeter. That wasn't the case on Sunday. They did wind up shooting 36% from three-point range, 17 of 47 shots, 47 out of 90 field goal attempts, so over half their offense from behind the three-point line. Unfortunately, a lot of those shots did not fall. They did manage to get to the line 20 times, knocking down 18 of those, so that wasn't the issue. They shot 45% overall, 44.4 to be exact, so their shooting was okay, but it seemed like a lot of their motion offense, the screening, the things that they had done well, just they weren't as effective. And you have to give credit to Mike Budenholzer for the first time in the series actually making some adjustments that seemed to work. Chris Middleton played 48 minutes. That was a career high for him. Now, obviously, the game had actually gone into overtime as well, something I forgot to mention earlier. After the Heat had what looked like a pretty solid lead in the fourth quarter, Middleton was able to help carry the way back. They got some big shots from other players as well. And Miami's lead just evaporated. They got, you know, they tied the game. Goran Dragic wound up putting up a shot from the corner to help seal the victory for Miami. But that shot actually, it was a wedgie. Got stuck in between the rim and the backboard. And so did not quite work out for the Heat. And then in an overtime, they were much more stagnant offensively in overtime than they had been even through the earlier in the game. They wound up scoring only 8 points in overtime. Two shots from Tyler Hero, actually, who stepped up big in the clutch situation. He had 2 3-pointers to help keep Miami in it, but actually it was just 1 bucket from Jimmy Butler, and other than that, nobody else scored. So 2 shots from Hero, 1 from Butler, and everybody else just seemed really tired. They seemed really gassed, and I'll kind of get into it a little bit later on in the next segments, because there's nothing you can really say out about this game. They look sluggish. They did not look energized. They did play down to their opponent a little bit. I got a question about that that I'll answer later on. But it was just an ugly affair. Somehow, I'm not sure what it was about the Antetokounmpo loss. It just seemed to throw everything off balance. The first quarter, especially early on in the first quarter when they were able to build a double-digit lead early, Miami looked as good as they had over the first three games. And I think they kind of felt that they would be able to cruise pretty easily. And from that point forward, they took their foot off the gas a little bit. This isn't to take anything away from the Bucks, although I don't think anybody here listening to this show cares. But Milwaukee actually did wind up playing very, very well. Again, without Antetokounmpo, they were resolute. They were focused. They played differently. This isn't to say, and I know a lot of the conversation on Twitter is, well, maybe the Bucks are better without Antetokounmpo. That's ridiculous. Things happen when you lose a star player. We've seen the Heat play well without Jimmy Butler. They've lost to the Boston Celtics with Jimmy Butler in the lineup, and yet in the Orlando bubble, without Butler, they were able to beat Boston. Is that to say that Miami is better without Boston? No. It forces the team to play differently. And without Antetokounmpo, Milwaukee had to change the way they score the ball. There was a lot more motion there. It's not about getting Giannis the ball up court, watching him build up steam and run downhill to try to get to the rim. You're not standing around watching him. It's not the offense isn't Antetokounmpo surrounded by shooters. You know, it's moving the ball from George Hill to Eric Bledsoe to Lopez to Middleton, all of them kind of touching the ball, swinging around. George Hill had 12 points off the bench. You know, Miami's bench has been a strength of the series by far, and yet with the exception of Hero, who scored 11 points, albeit on a very inefficient 4 of 11 shooting, the Milwaukee bench absolutely outplayed Miami this series. They got, again, 12 points from Hill, 10 points from DiVincenzo. They even got some buckets from Marvin Williams, who's looked pretty ineffective overall. So it was not a good game. Very, very atypical. And again, not to take anything away from Milwaukee, but Miami just seemed to really collapse under exhaustion, both physical, mental, and then just seemed to change the way they played the game. Not very used to seeing this version of the Heat, and it looked a little bit like that we had seen from them back in March when they were experiencing some injury issues and they weren't quite as cohesive as they've looked in the bubble. But I think there's no bigger concern than why did Miami just fall apart the way they did, and there seems to be a lot of lack of momentum on Miami's side. Can Milwaukee crawl back into this? Historically, it's never been done. Down 3-0, no team has ever been able to mount a comeback. And even with Antetokounmpo in or out of the lineup, I'll have to say I don't think there's a chance that Milwaukee would be able to knock off Miami. And look, this is why you build those 3-game lead. If somebody had said a week ago, before the series started, that Miami would be up 3-1, you'd take that in a heartbeat. Now, after a commanding 3-game showing and a possibility of a sweep that was, look, you lost by 3 points. That's the reality, is that Miami lost by just 3 points. Despite poor offense, despite bad defense throughout the game, I don't think that there's anything fatalistic about what happened on Sunday that you should be taking as the overarching theme here. They played badly. They'll play better on in the future of the series. I'm not too concerned about it, to be 100% honest with you. I think Miami finds a way to play their best effort in Game 5 the way they weren't able to on Sunday. And that's just my thought about the series. I think they'll be able to stay focused. I think they'll be able to make the adjustments necessary. Budenholzer shifted some things. He played some three-guard lineups that I think created some problems defensively for Miami. There were a couple switches and key moments there and key baskets that maybe Miami should look to avoid. But I think it also just seemed like a lot of the shots weren't falling. And I know this is overly simplistic. And maybe if you want to listen to more analytically bent analysis, I'm sorry, because that just doesn't seem like it's not a strong suit of mine. It's not something that I can focus on as well as just saying honestly that I think Miami just lacked a lot of energy. They weren't able to hit a lot of the shots that they were able to make throughout the first three games of the series. Goran Dragic in particular struggled from the field, and it's something I'll get into. Jimmy Butler was not able to take over late as we expected him to do, so not the best overall effort. There's nothing else that you can say about it. Miami lost Game 4. And now they move on to a Game 5 on Tuesday. Should be a good one. I'll talk a little bit about the good, the bad, and the ugly, further recapping the game, and of course answering your questions in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. You know, the other day, There's this deep dish pizza place here in Miami that I really wanted to try. I'd seen some ads on Instagram, really piqued my curiosity. Unfortunately, they're not open for dine-in services just yet, and I'm not really comfortable going out anyway, and I just didn't have the time to go and pick it up. It's a little further out of my range that I'd like to travel, but it didn't matter because I could rely on DoorDash. And that's what you should be doing as well, because between all the different things that you have to handle throughout the day, sometimes you just get a craving for a particular meal, whether it's pizza or sushi or anything that you might possibly want. I know those are the things that really always seem to get my cravings going. But DoorDash has always been able to come through for me. And right now, it's the app that brings you the food that you're craving right now. That's really what it is. Ordering is easy. You open the DoorDash app, you choose what you want to eat, and your food will be left safely outside your door with a new contactless delivery drop-off setting. They've got over 300,000 partners in the U.S., Puerto Rico, Canada, and Australia. And you can support your local go-tos like that pizza place I was telling you about. Or you can even go to national restaurants like Chipotle or Wendy's or even the Cheesecake Factory, which they're open. Many of your favorite local restaurants are still open for delivery, but you just use the DoorDash app, select the favorite restaurant, and your food will be left at your door. The deliveries are now contactless to help keep communities that we operate in safe. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter the code LOCKEDONNBA. That's $5 off and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter the code LOCKEDONNBA. Don't forget, that's code LOCKEDONNBA for $5 off your first order. Subscribe to the show on your favorite app to listen to podcasts. Always get the latest episode by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat when you get in your car to get your team every day. 6 of 20. Miami's bench shot 6 of 20. 1 of 3 from Kelly Olynyk, 0 for 2 from Andre Iguodala, 1 of 4 from Kendrick Nunn, and 4 of 11 from Tyler Herro. That was a huge difference when Miami's bench had been such a clear strength overall. That wasn't the case on the Milwaukee side of things. Don't really, again, want to rehash it too much more other than to say that Hill and DiVincenzo put on a pretty good show on Sunday. Eric Bledsoe has inserted some energy into that starting lineup. He was out, obviously, in Game 1. Game 2, it didn't seem to matter. In Game 3, he was largely effective, although not particularly great. And in Game 4, he wound up having a pretty solid game, although his shooting continues to be a problem from the perimeter. Overall, though, Miami just continued to struggle, and I think that's kind of where I want to start off with, because as normally I go into the good, the bad, and the ugly. I'll start off with the ugly first. The ugly was actually Goran Dragic, 5 of 17 from the floor, and not a particularly good game from him. It pains me to have to drag Goran's name through the mud here a little bit, but he was probably Miami's worst player with the exception of Kendrick Nunn, and it's something that I'll get into a little bit later. But Dragic, a lot of those shots were open, and he played 40 minutes in Game 4, and you wonder whether or not the wear and tear of the playoffs is starting to get to him. Now, Miami was off on Saturday. Normally, they have a practice session, and then they have a Zoom conference call with media after practice. They canceled that Zoom call, and my assumption is that they canceled practice, any kind of physical practice as well. They may have had film session. They may have taken the day off. And it didn't seem to matter because, again, that energy level was really, really just low. And I looked at all 17 of Goran's shots. A lot of those were pretty wide open. They were shots that, you know, obviously some of them were contested. Some of them, you know, they had some Bucks players closing out from the behind the perimeter. He was 1 of 9 from three-point range. Worst game of the Orlando bubble for Goran. And looking at those shots, again, it seemed like they just fell flat. It's hard to explain. I don't think there was any kind of mental edge loss for Goran. It just seemed like he didn't have that extra energy, and I'm not sure what it was. His family is still in Slovenia, and they are not traveling here, so it's not like he has a distraction in the bubble. We've heard some theories now that, you know, players are able to bring family members or girlfriends or other people close to them that might provide a distraction for them. That wasn't the case with Goran. He's maintained that this is a business trip for him, as it is for Jimmy Butler and several other players on the Heat roster. It's not like they're being distracted by families in the bubble, although I don't see how that would be a distraction that would lead to the kind of shooting performance that we saw from him on Sunday. But it was just very, very strange to see him not be able to knock down those shots and look particularly ugly from behind the perimeter, in particular 1 of 9. It was the kind of shooting that I did not expect to see from a player like Goran Dragic after he shot so well from Orlando. He was moving fine. He was able to cut to the rim on occasion. The floater was still working for him. Still a couple of shots that he hit, but they weren't bad shots. Again, you want him to take all 17 of those field goal attempts if necessary in game 5, but he's got to knock down at least a couple of them. Think about that. I mean, if he just goes 7 of 17, which is not anywhere close to his shooting percentages, Miami wins this game. Two more shots from Goran, and Miami seals a game 4, and they break out the brooms, and nobody's falling off the cliff that they are today. So you don't want to pin it on Goran specifically. He was not available to media after the game, and I just imagine that he's probably going to be able to step up. We have not seen him struggle in consecutive games, so I assume if you have to, you know, again, ask me what the game 5 situation would be like, I think Miami finds a way to respond. I think Goran finds a way to play a little better. And I don't think it was anything that Milwaukee did defensively. Now, of course, they challenged a lot of Goran's shots, but that wasn't the case. He had open shots that he just has not knocked down. He did not knock down in game 4, and he has throughout the series. So my feeling is that he'll bounce back, and it's necessary because, you know, they weren't getting the production that they got off the bench. Again, even if Kelly Olynyk hits one shot, Tyler Herro hits one shot, then Miami's outcome is very, very different than what it was on Sunday. So, you know, the make or miss league tends to get kind of dragged as, you know, so overly simplistic and cliche and things of that sort. But that is a reality of this series. I mean, there is only so much that the right scheme and the right substitution and the right play call can do in these kind of situations. Ultimately, it's a man with the ball wide open and taking that shot. If it rims out, that's the end of the game. I mean, 118 to 115, Goran hits one of those three-pointers. Let's see, if he's even 3 of 9, 33%, 33%, 3 of 9, Miami wins this game by 3. So I don't know. You don't want to ever look at it as simplistically, perhaps, but that is sometimes the reality, is that Miami could have played a lot better, they could have shot a lot better, and Goran, in particular, struggled from the field, and it hurt Miami on Sunday. The bad of game 4 was Kendrick Nunn. He is very ineffective. And I think the rationale behind Eric Spoelstra is that he wants to be able to put Nunn out there to inject some offense, because that's the feeling, is that with Nunn's athleticism and his ability to create his own shot, he can inject a boost of energy with a lifeless offense. But the problem is also that he is somewhat of, he's going to hold on to the ball a little bit. He's going to put up the shot. And if that shot's not falling, there's no reason to have him out there. Now, he played 8 minutes, went 1 of 4 from the field, 1 of 3 from three-point range. Again, a couple of those shots, probably not the best. Some were open, and he took them. Did not connect. So he was a plus-minus, -7, a team worst -7 from the roster there. And it just looked it. He's getting cooked on defense. One time he switched on to Chris Middleton. Middleton easily pulled up for the shot and knocked it over him. And that's something that one of you asked about, and I'll answer that in the next segment. But Nunn just, I'm not sure what it is that he's doing out there. He just looks a little lost, a little confused. And I have to say, we're using the COVID diagnosis as a way of covering up or kind of making excuses for his poor behavior. But the reality is that this dates back to even before the pandemic broke out. And I just don't think that's the case. I think he's lost a lot of his confidence. I think he's just not feeling the way he was for most of the early part of the season when he was having some huge games, and the expectation that he was going to be able to come in and provide that boost right away has fallen flat. I'm not sure if it was his demotion. He's tried to stay upbeat. Everybody's tried to talk to him and say, look, your time will come. You got to step up. You know, Bam Adebayo said something about everybody stays ready so they can be ready. And you know, you kind of talk about the next man up mentality. And again, a lot of these cliches get dragged out there, and perhaps rightfully so. But that is the mentality behind this team, is that when somebody breaks down due to injury or isn't playing well, somebody else has to step up and find a way to perform well. And Kendrick has not been able to do that for the most part. He just, you seem to kind of rally behind him whenever he knocks down a shot, as he did earlier. His first shot of the game was a make, a three-pointer, and you kind of think, oh, hey, he's got his stroke back. And then all of a sudden, he just plays a few more minutes and is just largely ineffective, and you wonder what he's doing out there. I don't know I don't know if there's an answer to that, again, other than the hope is that he'll be able to provide some offense, and he does not. And he certainly does not provide much defense either. Look, he has played well defensively in spots on occasion during the series. I wouldn't expect that to be the norm, and especially not on a day when Milwaukee's guards were playing their very best. So the good, if there was anything, was Bam Adebayo playing at a different level than everybody else. And you have to say it was a little bit of a disappointing effort, as much as it was for Goran to play as badly as he did and score as poorly as he did. Jimmy Butler was not much better. I think we've come to rely on Jimmy Butler, the fourth quarter savior, to kind of step up and be able to lock in a win for Miami. I know I sure did. When the six-minute mark rolled around and Miami was down four, a lot of Heat Twitter seemed like they were letting go of the rope, to use a Spoism. And I thought, you know what? It's not that big a deal. Jimmy's going to be able to find a way to get to the line. Jimmy's going to be able to find a way to knock down a key shot in a key moment there. And that wasn't the case. He did have a nice shot. He did have a dunk to open up overtime. And I thought, okay, now they'll be able to steal it away. Other than that, he didn't seem to have it. I'm not sure if it was a lack of aggression from him. I'm not sure if he was tired physically. Either way, just a 17-point outing. Now, I've seen some people talk about Jimmy during the series, that aside from a big game one and a strong fourth quarter in game three, he's been mostly kind of meh. That might be accurate and also a little overly simplistic, at least to me. In game four, I think it was pretty clearly his worst showing. And maybe we're not even talking about this if, again, Goran hits a couple shots and Miami wins. But Jimmy, just 6 of 15, not a great shooting day from him, and kind of cooked a little bit defensively as well. He did get abused by Chris Middleton. Wes Matthews hit some shots. Again, Jimmy just didn't seem to have that next energy level that we've seen from him throughout the series, and so that was a little disappointing. But the player who did, Bam Adebayo, I don't want to take anything away from him because he was absolutely great. There was a moment there, I want to say in overtime, when Jimmy took a shot and the ball caromed off, and there was Bam facing four Bucks defenders and somehow managed to fight and claw his way to a rebound. Just a supreme effort from him. He just gave it everything he's got. 10 of 13 from the field. And that perimeter shot, not from three-point range, but the mid-range game, is really looking smooth. He's looking every bit the player that we had hoped he'd be this season. I think we looked at what his progress was going to be like this season, and was going to be expanding his ranges a little bit to the point where eventually, down the line, he'll be able to take three-pointers comfortably. Not this season, but the next and the next beyond that. That didn't happen during the regular season, before the hiatus. We've seen bits and pieces of that jumper being a let go during the Orlando bubble, but yesterday, it seemed like he was really dialed in. And I think we're going to totally overlook his fantastic performance, but 26 points, 10 of 13 from the field, 12 rebounds, 8 assists, nearly a triple-double to go with a steal and some exceptional defense. I think nobody played one-on-one defense as well as Bam. He was the only consistent good point there because he was able to switch on to Middleton. He was able to switch on to Adetokounmpo when he was in the game. He did everything right on switches. Continues to be a fantastic player. Now, again, never going to be that kind of gaudy production, although yesterday that was not the case. But there could be an argument that Bam might be Miami's best player to some degree. I know it's maybe that's a little bit of a recency bias based on his fantastic game four performance, but you kind of see what he's able to do. Also, 6 of 6 from the line. Impressive shooting overall. Just a day when he had it absolutely dialed in. So didn't want to mention that because it's important to point out that there was some good points there and maybe a couple shots fall in, and we're not talking about a game five here, but that was not the case, unfortunately. Miami's lackluster offense, listless performances, and some bad shooting from some key players there really hurt their chances. I'll get into a little bit more about some of the rotation choices, some of the defensive issues, and just continue answering your questions in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. That you can can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskHelloHeat. This message comes from King Ron. He sent me a direct message on Twitter, which is always open to anybody who wants to send those questions in or talk about anything in particular. He sends this first question in. Why do the Heat consistently switch small guards onto Middleton when they have him stop them once during the year? A quick soft hedge would allow us to keep the bigger bodies on him, as well as guard the screener popping for a three, and then we have the others to protect the rim when said screener is usually a guard in this situation. Now, it's an interesting point there. I will say that they were doing things a little differently on a couple of these possessions that I think King Ron is talking about. It didn't happen as often as you'd think. I looked at each of Middleton's shots. He was guarded mostly by guys like Bam, Crowder, Andre Iguodala, and Jimmy Butler. And they were all, with the exception of Adebayo, cooked for a shot. Middleton, I remember writing a piece years ago about Middleton's turnaround jumper, because I think it was when he was with the Detroit Pistons at the time, which seems like an eternity ago. That's how long ago I wrote this piece. But I remember breaking down how effective his turnaround jumper is. And he has, I want to say, like a 6'11 reach. He's also tall. I think he's listed at 6'5 or 6'6, maybe even 6'7. Regardless, the point is that he's got that turnaround jumper, and he's got a lot of the effectiveness of it is because he has that high release. He's not an incredibly athletic leaper or anything like that, but all he needs is a little space to get that shot off. And so with his length and his soft touch, he'll get that shot off over anybody. And he was able to do that against some of Miami's bigger defenders. And when you switch a smaller guard, as King Ron points out, then that's usually a green light for him to rise up for the shot. Now, there were a couple moments there where it worked out in Miami's favor. They got a Tyler Hero switch. Goron was able to guard him on a couple occasions. I think he missed a couple of those shots. Looking back now, he missed a couple of the shots that Goron defended him on in the switches. So it's not an 100% guarantee that he's going to get the score in. But in particular at overtime, these are the shots that King Ron is referring to when George Hill was setting the screen for him. And he turned his body in such a way where it forced Jay Crowder on both occasions to go under the screen to pick up Middleton, and then he would wind up covering George Hill in the process, leaving Goron to go and come around and pick up Middleton. And Middleton, to his credit, was able to knock down shots that he has not always been able to knock down this late in the game. And that's the whole thing, too. It's like he played more minutes yesterday than he has at any point in time. And so we weren't expecting that kind of effort from him. He had a supreme game. It was fantastic from him to be able to play those kind of minutes and still be able to knock down those shots in the second half. Unfortunately, it was at Miami's expense there. So I have to say, I understand King Ron's concerns that maybe you can put that hedge on there and keep Crowder onto Middleton. But ultimately, I don't think it mattered. You look back at all of those shots, and some of those were against Crowder, right in his face, putting a hand up, against Jimmy Butler, against a taller Iguodala. All of them had a crack at Middleton, and he was able to knock down those shots. It was his night. He had a great game, and while it looked like those guards were getting roasted in overtime, I don't think you can pin this on them necessarily. Steve Kolakidis writes, do you think the Bucks are less predictable with Giannis off the court, or did Miami simply blow that game? Also think Miami needs to be better to not get Middleton switched onto Goron so often. He's just too tall and too good. Now, I addressed the Goron situation, Steve, so thank you for sending in that second question. That first part is, do you think the Bucks are less predictable with Giannis off the court? And yes, I also addressed that in the first segment, and I really do think that's the case. Did Miami blow the game? Absolutely they did. Milwaukee played a very good game, changing things up, having a little bit more of energy than they have during the first three games. And again, without Adetokounmpo on the floor, they just do things a little differently. They can use those screen and roll situations with a multiple guard lineup where you have multiple shooters out there. With Adetokounmpo struggling from the field, particularly from the perimeter, it's a very one-dimensional offense. That was a big criticism. Now, that's not on Budenholzer, who's taken more than his fair share of criticism for the way things have gone during the series, but a lot of the offense goes through Adetokounmpo, and that's part of the problem. It's why Miami looks as dynamic as they do, is that they have multiple players who make plays for others who can get their shots down. Look, yesterday, Jay Crowder was unstoppable from behind the line. I have to mention, I did not even talk about him at any point, but he scored 18 points on 6 of 12 shooting. 50% of his shot, all of them came from behind the three-point line. Crowder was fantastic. He looked great. He looked really dynamic, particularly in the first half. And, you know, they just have multiple players that can score at such a high level. Milwaukee, that's not always the case. A lot of their offense runs through Adetokounmpo, and then Middleton kind of takes up the slack as their second star. You get good performances here and there from Lopez and Bledsoe and others. But overall, Adetokounmpo is expected to carry the bulk of that workload, and without him, they did things a little differently. They were desperate, and you have to acknowledge that. I just don't think there's any way around it. Milwaukee was, at least for one day, a little bit better. If I had to guess, I don't think he plays game five. And I think that plays to Miami's favor. Again, without a player who's going to get to the line as often, without a guy who's going to be able to have a huge monster game. Middleton had a really big game. I don't think it's the kind of performance that Adetokounmpo could put up. Adetokounmpo could put up a 50-piecer. He can go 40 deep. You know, that's the kind of thing that he can do because he can get to the line so much. And if his shot is falling against a worse defense, Adetokounmpo can feast in a way he has not been able to against Miami. So I think Miami still likes their chances against a team without Giannis. I wonder what happens in Game 5. It should be interesting. We'll know more today, and I'll always be able to report it as quickly as I can. Now, this next question comes in from our favorite yoga lady, Claudia, who writes, Goran seemed off, and Jimmy had a pretty terrible game as well. I also question Spo's decision not to play Derek Jones Jr. for more defense. What do you think? The Goran and Jimmy situation, we've talked about that a little bit already, so thank you so much for sending that question in, Claudia. As far as Derek Jones Jr., who got 0 minutes in yesterday's game, I have to agree with you. He had a good game three, and I'm not sure why he didn't get any kind of playing time there. I think Spo saw the guards and thought to himself that maybe Derek Jones Jr. wouldn't be able to get his shot going with a smaller defender on him, perhaps. Derek needs a lot of space to get that three-pointer going, which is where he's been mostly effective. If you have a guard out there to close out, maybe that was a concern for Eric Spoelstra. I really don't know. I don't think he wasn't asked that in the post-game media session, and I don't know that there's a clear answer. Tends not to get challenged on his rotation decisions a lot, and overall, I think he just thought that the effort was bad, that they kind of caved a little bit. And Jimmy Butler, again, to his credit, said, you know, that they deserve to lose that game, and I think that's pretty fair. I think Derek is not necessarily the solution, but he might have been able to provide a little bit more than what Kendrick Nunn did, and this, you know, comes in the next question as well from Rachel Rose, who writes in, do you see Spo swapping K-Nunn for Derek Jones Jr. completely in Game 5? Surely we've seen enough from him. We've given him enough time to get into reasonable form. Cannot risk any more inefficiency in these crunch times. Rachel, I agree with you on all those points. I don't think so. I think, look, earlier in the Orlando bubble when Eric Spoelstra sat down, Myers Leonard did not play Kendrick Nunn because, well, he wasn't available. But he made some tough choices, and I thought to myself, man, this is a version of Spoelstra that we have not seen before. But then he's been a little bit more rigid, going to his guys a little bit more often. Goran's been a starter, and that's paid off for the most part, but he keeps going to Kendrick. Maybe he's just trying to give him a taste here and there as far as playing time is concerned to bolster his confidence a little bit. But I don't think it's going to work. At this point, too much is on the line here for Miami to move forward. And against either the Raptors or the Celtics, I can tell you Kendrick Nunn's not going to be able to play well against either of those teams, although I think he has had some bright spots against the Raptors. I don't know, Rachel and Claudia. I'm not sure if Derek plays more minutes in Game 5. I think he should. I think with Middleton playing the way he was and with some offense running through Hill and Bledsoe and others, having a perimeter wing defender like Derek certainly helps. I don't think that there was any problem with leaving Goran in there for a key position late in the game. And I think a lot of Heat Twitter had some issues with Goran playing there because he was called for a foul that was a very, very touchy foul there that I don't think should have been called at all. Middleton was able to get to the line and get some free throws. Maybe it would have been different with Derek Jones on him. But again, Derek can be a little out of control defensively as well. He gets called for a lot of fouls too, so I don't think that's necessarily the case. As far as his offense and being able to provide a little something different, especially on the defensive end, I think he'd largely be more effective than what Kendrick is doing. If Kendrick isn't able to knock down his shot, which again has been his greatest strength all season long, then why not give Derek a couple minutes here and there? As many minutes as you did in game three when he was pretty effective and had some nice stretches there where he had some big blocks, and maybe he swings the tide a little bit. You know, without Adekunpo there as a rim protector in the game, you can't find a way to lob the ball into Derrick Jones Jr. for a dunk here and there. I think it makes sense. I think that's a change that makes a lot of sense and would probably have worked in Miami's favor. Steven asks, how do the Heat seem to play to the other team's talent level? I don't know. I don't know if it's necessarily the talent level, although I've kind of hinted at it before that they do at times play down to their competition, but they certainly did not seem as energized and engaged as they have during the first three games of the series. I think they assumed that it was going to be an easy win without Adekunpo, and in fact, it was just the opposite. And I think they just they felt like they had the game under control early on, and they had to change their energy a little bit. They seemed tired too, like they were so focused on stopping Adekunpo, and without him in the game, I think it just threw them off for a loop. I'm not sure exactly what happened. JJack44 writes, not shocked by this loss, but am shocked by their effort. I expected more intensity of them down the stretch to close it out. Jade, I agree with you 100%. I think that's the theme here, is that they not play a good game. They play pretty badly overall. They still could have won it. And I think that's a big takeaway, too. It's not as bad as it seems. They were right there towards the end, even with a bad showing in overtime and some bad offense through most of the game. They were right there, and they think they're still a better team than Milwaukee by far. They've controlled the matchup as well as any team could. They know what to do. They're well coached. They had their best game. The Bucks had their best game from a number of key players, and they still just eked out a 3-point win here. So it should be a short series still, and it looks like the Boston-Toronto series is going to go for a few more games. Now they're tied up at 2 games apiece. Should be interesting. We'll be back here in a couple days for a Game 5 recap. Make sure to subscribe and follow this podcast to get the latest episode of Locked on Heat as soon as it's out. I'm David Ramil signing off, and thank you as always for your support.